Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
I will say this. It's wonderful to watch people over a laptop, but it's not like being in a church. And we have to get our people back to churches, and we're going to start doing it soon.
The naturalist assumption applied to the issue of the resurrection, it really is not a scientific approach to this historical question of what accounts for the empty tomb if you're ignoring massive amounts of evidence.
By thinking that the Bible's about me, that I have to make it relatable to other people, it then makes it so that Christ becomes a supporting character that makes few appearances in Scripture, and you don't know what to do with them.
So when we eat Christ's flesh physically and spiritually, the food is so powerful that it transforms us into itself, and out of fleshly, sinful, mortal men makes spiritual, holy, living men.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love Issues Etc.
Earlier this week, the Justice Department sided with the Virginia Church in its challenge to a state shutdown order that would have limited the size of religious gatherings. I wonder, will this ruling have any impact on other churches, many churches and church bodies, who are thinking of legally challenging government restrictions with regard to how many people can gather on a Sunday morning, or any day for that matter, in their churches for worship? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Friday afternoon, May the 8th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about government restrictions on religious worship services. Luke Goodrich, Vice President and Senior Counsel for the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty, will be our guest. A little bit later, Dr. Kevin Golden joins us. He has a PhD in Biblical Studies with an emphasis on Old Testament from Concordia Seminary. We're going to remember Patriarch Prophet Job. The church remembers him on the 9th of May. It's This Week in Pop Christianity. We're going to talk about how the modern-day prophets are trying to explain away how wrong they were in their predictions about this pandemic. Pastor Chris Roseborough, host of the daily internet talk show called Fighting for the Faith, will be our guest. And then, since it's Friday, we're going to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. With you, our listeners, we have 4 sound bites lined up, one from Matt Walsh, one from Lyman Stone. Pastor David Peterson and Dr. Christian Kincaid will play them for you in their entirety in the last half hour. Your vote will decide which will be sound bite of the week. You can vote by giving us a call then, 1-877-623-MYIE. Or in the meantime, you could vote in advance by sending us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our Twitter address is @IssuesETC, or our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/IssuesETC. Joining us to talk about government restrictions on religious worship services, Luke Goodrich. He's Vice President and Senior Counsel for the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty and author of the book, Free to Believe, The Battle Over Religious Liberty in America. Luke, welcome back.
Todd, thanks for having me. Great to be back.
Are these various government restrictions on religious worship services a violation of the free exercise of religion clause?
Well, some are and some aren't. Unfortunately, it's kind of a lawyerly answer that it depends. But, you know, there's a lot of law on these types of issues. And the basic principle is, you know, the starting point is fundamental right to free exercise of religion. And the government can only restrict that in the most pressing of circumstances. And so when you're dealing with a dangerous pandemic, you know, if you're at the height of a dangerous pandemic, the government does have an ability to restrict freedom of assembly as long as it's doing it temporarily and doing it in a uniform way, not targeting religious gatherings for special enforcement or disfavor. But if the government does place a heavier hand on religious gatherings than other types of gatherings, then it is a violation of religious liberty.
Is there any legal precedent regarding government restrictions on worship services? It sounds like there is some law.
There is, more in the sense of general principles, but even, you know, back in 1905, there's a Supreme Court case called Jacobson versus Massachusetts, and that was a pastor who actually objected to compulsory vaccination laws. And the Supreme Court, you know, held that your constitutional rights can be limited by public health, and the government can do some compulsory vaccination if it's essential to protect public health. And that's what we're really seeing in the modern conflicts with COVID-19 is, you know, there is an ability of the government in some degree to restrict our rights temporarily if it's essential for protecting public health, and there's no other way to do that. But if you give the government that inch and then they try to take a mile and try to restrict religious gatherings more than other types of gatherings, or if they try to restrict religious gatherings when they're not truly threatening public health, then that's a violation of the Constitution and the government needs to be held to account.
Do you expect lawsuits post-coronavirus to establish further precedent for the future?
Well, most of these conflicts where, you know, government is restricting religious gatherings, you can't really go back in time and sue the government for damages. What you can do is sue to try to get an injunction, like a court order stopping the government from enforcing it against you. So I think most of the conflicts you're going to see, most of the lawsuits anyways, are going to be happening now while the government orders are in place. But it's also a really fast-moving situation. You know, these orders are changing rapidly. And so if the government starts to back down, if the government starts loosening restrictions, a lot of these lawsuits will just evaporate and they won't end up making much precedent.
Does it make a difference to judges that there are historical sacramental churches like Lutheran, Catholic, Orthodox, who believe that gathering on Sunday morning is to gather around the physical bodily presence of Christ in the Holy Communion?
That's a really important point, and it's obviously so crucial for so many faith traditions to be able to gather in person. I would say when you come into a courtroom, though, the judge isn't going to treat one group differently from another simply because one group believes in the real presence and the other doesn't. It's really going to have to apply the same types of rules to all religious organizations, regardless of their theological beliefs.
What can individual congregations do to challenge these worship service restrictions now?
I'd say the number one thing religious groups can do is try to work in healthy collaboration with local government officials, because I don't think running off to court is not always the best first step. And we've seen a lot of religious groups, they've already in so many areas been bending over backwards to love their neighbors by restricting their gatherings and complying with government directives. You know, now as things are starting to loosen up, I think it's important for churches to make their voices heard in a polite and a loving way, pressing the urgency of being able to gather again in person, and not always, you know, just run to court or just run to civil disobedience as the first step. But if government officials won't listen, if they are treating churches worse than other types of non-religious gatherings, then there may be a need for lawsuits.
What can national church bodies do regarding worship service restrictions?
Well, I think a lot of these issues are going to play out at the local level, but national bodies, I think, have a really important role to play simply in providing wise counsel to local congregations and local bodies, you know, helping them navigate, you know, what are the needs of their community, what are the legitimate role for government in protecting public health, and, you know, maybe playing a role in approaching government officials. When a national church body, a denominational body, approaches a government official, they might get a bit more of a hearing than a single local congregation, and they can work hard to make sure government officials are allowing services to resume as soon as possible, consistent with public health.
How do you expect the courts to view the issue of government restrictions on worship gatherings?
Well, we've seen a number of court decisions in this area already, and I would say in general, courts are not eager to weigh in on this issue. You know, it's very fast moving. The facts on the ground are constantly changing, and courts are really loath to just play traffic cop on fast moving, fast changing scenarios between government and private citizens. But what you have seen is, you know, where the governments are really overstepping their bounds, where they're, you know, number one, where drive-in services have been prohibited, or, you know, the government is taking down license plate numbers and issuing threats, you have seen several courts step in and say the government can't prohibit drive-up services where social distancing is maintained and churches are really being safe. The harder cases, I think, so far have involved in-person gatherings, particularly when there's more than 10 people. And I think you've seen courts very hesitant in the height of this pandemic to tell governments they're not allowed to restrict gatherings.
Earlier this week, the Justice Department sided with the Virginia Church in its challenge to a state shutdown order limiting the size of religious gatherings. Do you think that this will have any impact on churches and church bodies who are legally challenging these government restrictions?
Yes, I think it will. The Department of Justice has done quite a good job, in my view, of looking for the instances of government overreach in the midst of the pandemic. So it's weighed in a number of cases, a couple that I mentioned with the drive-in church services where, you know, you could sit in your car in the Sonic drive-through and eat your hamburger, but the government's saying you can't sit in a parking lot and listen to the church service over the radio or over a loudspeaker. You know, the Department of Justice weighed in, and several courts have struck down or enjoined government restrictions on drive-in services. And, you know, Department of Justice has also kind of walked a fine line when it comes to in-person gatherings. You know, they've pointed out that the government can restrict in-person gatherings if it's doing so uniformly for non-religious and religious gatherings. But what the government can't do is treat religious gatherings worse than other types of gatherings.
What is the Beckett Fund hearing from churches around the country regarding government restrictions on worship services?
We've had a chance to counsel a number of churches across the country on different issues that are coming up. And some came to us early in the pandemic and early in the restrictions with questions about live streaming, because some governments were even unclear in their orders on whether enough staff members from a church could gather in order to live stream the service. And we worked with a number of churches who worked with their government officials to make sure that live streaming could happen. And I'd say what we're seeing now is just really an eagerness and understandably a fatigue with the level of restrictions that have been sustained for so long. I mean, everybody wants to get back. I want to get back into my church community in person and be able to give people a hug and be able to pass the peace. And so, you know, I think we're seeing an eagerness to get back, a watching and a waiting. And I think overall, the biggest thing we've seen from churches is just a tremendous willingness, you know, to their credit, to quickly change their operations, motivated not by fear of the virus, but rather motivated by a desire to love their neighbors, love the most vulnerable in their communities. And I think that, you know, as long as churches are still motivated by that love of neighbor, we're going to see a lot of good in the coming weeks and months.
The Beckett Fund presented arguments before the U.S. Supreme Court this week. Tell us about that, if you would, Luke.
Yeah, we had a historic oral argument just this week on behalf of the Little Sisters of the Poor. Now, this is an order of Catholic nuns who devote their lives to caring for the elderly poor. And you may recall during the Obama administration, the government tried to force the Little Sisters of the Poor and many other religious groups to use their own health insurance plans to deliver drugs to their employees, contraception, and drugs that could cause abortions. And the Little Sisters resisted that. Many other religious groups resisted that. And we took their case all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the court ultimately ruled in favor of the Little Sisters and sent the issue back down and basically told the government, you know, surely the most powerful government in the world can find a way to give out contraception without conscripting nuns. Sure enough, after President Trump was elected, the government passed a new regulation that protects the Little Sisters of the Poor and many other religious groups. And you would think that would be the end of the story, but unfortunately, a number of blue states, California, Pennsylvania, and a couple others, they sued the Trump administration, sued the Little Sisters, and actually argue that it's illegal for the government to protect the Little Sisters of the Poor. And so, unfortunately, a court of appeals agreed with that argument, and so we appealed to the Supreme Court, and that's what the argument was earlier this week. And we made the case that the government is allowed, both as a statutory matter and a constitutional matter, to protect religious groups like the Little Sisters of the Poor and give them an exemption so they don't have to use their health insurance plans to give out drugs that could cause an abortion. The argument went quite well, and we're optimistic about the outcome. And I would just flag, in addition to the argument this week, we also have another of our cases at the Supreme Court this coming Monday, May the 11th, we're representing a pair of religious schools that dismissed religion teachers for poor performance, and those teachers sued for discrimination. And we're arguing that the Constitution protects the right of all religious groups to choose who will teach their faith to the next generation. So that's another huge case to be watching.
Luke Goodrich is vice president and senior counsel for the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty. He's author of the book, Free to Believe, The Battle Over Religious Liberty in America. You can purchase this book and find out more about the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Luke, thank you very much.
Thank you, Todd.
The church remembers patriarch and prophet Job, a man known primarily for what he lost. We'll also talk about what he regained on the 9th of May. Dr. Kevin Golden will be with us after the break.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR20. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia University Chicago, with a message for parents, grandparents, and godparents of college-bound children. Concordia Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We're devoted to our Lutheran confession and committed to strong academics. Please encourage your child, grandchild, or godchild to check out Concordia University Chicago at cuchicago.edu.
Our pastors especially have carried a large burden to maintain Christ's instruction to provide word and sacrament ministry to their flocks. Thank your pastor by sending him an Ad Crucem greeting card or gift suitable for any budget. We recommend embroidered face masks, stunning posters confessing the faith, a crucifix or a pectoral cross, or how about a selection of Christmons? Recognize your faithful under-shepherd for upholding the office of holy ministry during these adverse circumstances. Visit adcrucem.com.